It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Of course, this morning we've got Cecil Harbell in the studio because Les is recovering, but there are good signs, I gather.
Oh, absolutely. Wes is doing well, and will be here next week, I'm sure. Good morning, Lockwood.
Good morning to you as well. And I see you dodged some of the rain as well.
Just a little bit. Lockwood, this morning I want to talk about, Wes and I are very involved. In fact, yesterday Wes was in a Superior Court trial more or less all day concerning this area of the law, which is known as generally, and these are big words, fiduciary liability. And fiduciary, Lockwood, is someone, a fiduciary is someone who holds property, money, for the benefit of another. And the categories of words that now will become very familiar to all of us are the agent under our power of attorney, the executor of our will, the trustee of our trust, the guardian of our property. So if you are a guardian or executor or trustee, or you are your parent's power of attorney, which is sometimes called their attorney in fact or their agent, then you are in a fiduciary relationship and you have certain duties and rights and obligations as a result of the fact that you are the named person, the qualifying individual under those documents. And that's kind of what we want to talk about today.
And you've got one other word I got to put in there.
What's that?
Responsibility.
You have the responsibility.
And you do. To the issue of fiduciary responsibility, that means someone can take umbrage with the way you handle matters.
There's just no question about it. And that, of course, is what that case was about yesterday that involved Mr. Collins all day long in Superior Court. And, of course, absolutely, Lockwood. One of the most active areas of the law now across this state and in other states is the area of law concerning the responsibilities of a fiduciary or response or fiduciary litigation. It is a very much growing area in the law. I'm not quite sure that I know why that is the case. Maybe it's because our this is conjecture, but maybe it's because our population is aging and there is a lot of higher percentage of early onset of disease. People are living longer. And as a result, we have more fiduciaries than we did at one point. I'm not real sure, Lockwood.
I think the other aspect of this, and I want to make
a philosophical question.
Right, but I'm make a comment about this, and I know this is what we're going to get into in this regard. It is literally dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And I mean, I'm confident of this that you're going to be chatting about that.
Yes.
But the other aspect of this related to the fiduciary responsibility is we now have such dispersed families. So a family in Washington State may not be all that comfortable or aware of what's going on with their grandparents and the fiduciary agent in North Carolina. And you've got all these doubts. You've got all these fears. So
there you go. The stage is set, if you will. Now, Lockwood, let's begin to talk about this. If you're going to handle monies, property, real property, whether it's a land, piece of land, a home, a condominium, or monies being a stock, IRA, bank accounts, annuities, the retirement funds, whatever it happens to be, if you are the agent under the power of attorney, or you're the executor under the will, or you're the trustee under the trust, then obviously we know that you are going to have a heightened, sense of record keeping. You are going to have to keep very accurate records. Even if you never in a million years dream that anyone in your family would question anything that you do, it is best that you keep very accurate records. also, any of these documents and the law in general supports the fiduciary Lockwood in their right to seek advice. Okay. And for the principal, if you will, to have to pay the cost of that. Mm-hmm. And many times it's not anything out of the ordinary. But if we need an accountant, then as a fiduciary, let's get an accountant. If we need a lawyer, if we need some incidental legal advice, then let's get a lawyer and let's get some incidental legal advice. Again, you personally will not have to pay for these professional services. You are allowed under the law to use the monies of the principal, if you will, the person who died, the person who appointed you as their power of attorney, the person who made you the trustee of their trust. You're allowed to use their monies to pay for competent professional advice. And this is very important because there are tax issues. Mm-hmm. There are tax filings that have to be made. And it's important that we have a good accountant, as a fiduciary. And it's important that you have many times a good lawyer to look into some of the questions that might arise from time to time and to give you guidance. So if you are taking on the responsibility of a fiduciary responsibility, Lockwood, you were well advised to put together a small little team of people, and most specifically, a good accountant and a good lawyer, okay?
I'm thinking the word prudent.
Prudent. It's a good word.
That you have to take every prudent action to assure for those that not only that you're taking care of, but those that you represent. Because now, I'm curious, in the fiduciary responsibility, the individual is representing, for example, they may be representing the individual who, and we'll get into that, related to illness. Mm-hmm. They have fiduciary responsibility for that individual. But by nature, do they not also have, by, if you will, an extension responsibility to the other family members? Is that part of that issue of fiduciary responsibility?
Well, it is, particularly in a trust document, that you are under a fiduciary obligation not only to the grantor or the creator of the trust, but to all of the other beneficiaries of the trust, or similar kind of responsibility in a will where you're responsible for all of the beneficiaries. There is a fiduciary responsibility mm-hmm. that arises to all of the beneficiaries under the will. And the standard, Lockwood, is the famous legal standard, the reasonable person standard.
Okay.
What would a reasonable person do under all of these circumstances, considering all of the factors? How would a reasonable person respond? What would a reasonable person do under those circumstances? You are not required to be perfect. You just like the principal, you know, mm-hmm. mistakes happen. Investment decisions are not always perfect decisions. when to sell a property, when to hold on to a property, when to let go of a car, when to buy a new car, you know, when to make a repair to a real property, to a home, and when not to make a repair. How much money to use for this? How much money to use for that? These are decisions that we all make on our day in our life on a day-to-day basis, Lockwood. And none of us, let's face it, make perfect decisions. Sometimes, you know, hindsight, 2020, we kind of shake our heads and say, gosh, why did I do that? You know, that wasn't a very good investment, or that was not the something. If I had it all over to do again, I would have done that a little bit differently.
Right.
So you're not held to a perfect standard, but you are certainly held to a reasonable person standard. You also are going to have to be a bit more conservative in your thinking. For instance, you know, it's fine if it's your money to invest in, what is it called, nickel stock or speculative stock mm-hmm. or something of that nature. Hey, that's okay. It's your money. If that's your decision to do that, to liquidate everything and put it all in one particular stock and hope for the Yahoo or the Facebook mm-hmm. or the this or the that, then hey, if that's what you want to do, that's your decision. But when you are responsible for the money of another, and as we said earlier, also responsible to other people in the family, other beneficiaries in the will, other beneficiaries in the trust, then that is not what a reasonable person would do. You're not going to be able to take those kinds of risks.
All right. We got to take a quick break and just remind you, of course, you're listening to Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell and Collins, and the website, harvellandcollins.com. I should have offered. Feel free to call in, because this is an issue that I'm confident, as Cecil just pointed out, is a growing area in this fiduciary responsibility. 800-818-2255. That toll-free number, 800-818-2255. I'll give you the number for Harvell and Collins in just a moment. We're talking with Cecil Harvell this morning. Wes Collins is recovering. We had a caller who called
yes.
I think it was last week.
Yeah.
And thank you very much. And the number, by the way, 800-818-2255. You can call them at their office, the right advice at the right time, and that number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. We're talking about fiduciary responsibility. Look, as a fiduciary, you're worried about keeping up with all the documentation, keeping, having been one, I know, keeping every bill, organizing it, keeping up with, you know, all the records, both for the beneficiary, benefit of the other beneficiaries, as well as, you mentioned it, IRS. And then in the midst of all of it, there are some evenings when you worry, what should I make? What should be the decision? So forth and so on. And I say that tongue in cheek, because it's more than just one evening. It's all the time. So here's my question. Does the fiduciary get compensated for this worry and work?
Yes, they do. They do.
Okay.
The guidance for that begins with the document. If there's a trust, if there is a will, if it addresses compensation, then that's going to be a controlling factor.
What if it
sometimes
does not?
It does not.
Okay.
And then the law, if you will, statutory law steps in and states what an agent under a power of attorney, how they're to be compensated. An agent, of course, under a will, namely the executor. And, of course, an agent under a trust, namely a trustee. So absolutely, Lockwood. The law, again, a reasonable approach. It's not reasonable to expect someone to take on this responsibility and this worry and this concern and there not be compensation. Now, compensation is just that, but there's also reimbursement. Reimbursement, there really is no question about. I mean, if you incur a cost, travel, you advance a bill for some reason just because you happen to be caught right there and they need a credit card and that's the only way it will work, then, you can be reimbursed. That, of course, that needs to just be said. Reimbursements are 100% across the board. Compensation, on the other hand, is going to be governed by either the statute or the document itself. Now, one of the first places that this evolves is in the context, really, Lockwood, of the power of attorney. And, I've spoken so many times on the program about the fact that we all think that we need to add our son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter to our account in order to allow them to have access. Well, of course, access is ownership, okay? Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, we have a $100,000 CD or a, $75,000 money market account that is with survivorship to this one member of the family, which can, of course, strike the match with all the others. Mm-hmm. It is not necessary to put your son, daughter, granddaughter on your account. You have a power of attorney. Banks recognize the power of attorney. Stock companies recognize it. All of your financial companies do, and you give them a copy of the recorded power of attorney. Sometimes they want to see the original. Sometimes they have their own inner office form that they want filled out. But once you go through these motions, then you are the agent on the account. And then, of course, you are able to have access to the funds. And this is, of course, what we advise, that you act as an agent on the account, but not necessarily have the account titled in your name.
Because in process of titling your name, and I want to make a comment of previous conversations we've had related to wills, estates, power of attorneys, things of this nature. You've said over and over again, it's not that complicated. Folks need to come in. They need to get this done. And you said a moment ago, it would be named in the power of attorney. But in the process of being named as an owner, then some of the responsibility, tax liability, falls to the owners. Do they not? I mean, you have to worry about the tax issues associated with
it. Oh, yes, definitely. You have to absolutely look at the tax issues. For instance, if you liquidate an asset, and the principal is still living, for instance, under a power of attorney, then there very likely could be capital gains taxation. And that has to be looked at. There are the minimum distributions from the IRA and tax, other tax issues, of course, with IRAs. There are the, surrender penalties on an annuity if you're liquidating an annuity, or maybe some other investment has a surrender penalty. All of those kinds of things have to be looked at and analyzed.
Right. We've got a caller standing by. I want to go to real quickly Bob in Morehead City. And Bob, good morning. Cecil Harvell here in the studio.
Good morning, yes, Bob.
Good morning. In the accounting, for instance, if you're the trustee, how often and to whom do you have to do reporting of what you're actually conducting within the trust or as a will? Do you have to report to everybody that's in the trust or the will or not?
Well, Bob, that's an excellent question, but it's very loaded. First of all, what might work under a will, the answer for a will is going to be different for a trust, but let's just kind of hit at it. And it's such a great question, Bob, that I think I'll just spend the rest of our time talking about it. Wes and I, by the way, will continue to talk about this subject next week. Now, Bob, the first thing, of course, is going to be what the document says. We're going to need to look at the trust, and we're going to need to see what it has to say about rendering an accounting when and to who. And that is going to govern and control. And I'm going to talk about it in a minute about what if it doesn't say anything, but let's go to a will for a minute. A will is going to be a little bit different because a will by nature is a public document. It is filed, and there are certain public accountings that are made, and anyone can have access to those accountings as to the assets that are passing, of course, according to the will. You know, some assets don't pass according to the will, as we've discussed so many times in this program. Life insurance, right. Annuities, IRAs, assets that are in a trust are not going to pass according to the will.
Right.
So only the assets that are passing according to the will are going to be on the accountings, the 90-day inventory, the annual accounting, and the final accounting with the clerk of court. And those documents, those assets are certainly going to be disclosed to anyone who wishes to see them. There is no duty to the executor, Lockwood, to specifically send the copies of those accountings. Now, I know I didn't answer fully the question on trust. I see you waving at me for a break.
All right, we'll come back. We're going to get that in just a moment. Bob, good question. Thank you very much for calling.
I'm going to hang up and let you finish.
All right, thanks again. You're listening to Coastal Daybreak with Cecil Harvell here on Let's Talk Legal. And by the way, I've got a gut feeling we'll not get to all the details on this. You can give them a call, 726-9050, or online at harvellandcollins.com. Harvell and A-N-D, harvellandcollins.com, 252 area code 726-9050. We're talking with Cecil Harvell, and we've got about 2 minutes to go, Cecil. I'm sorry, but this will give us something
for
next week.
Well, back to Bob's question, and we will continue to talk about this next week. back to the trust a minute. Again, we're going to look at what the trust language says. The trust language might have something in it about rendering accountings.
Mm-hmm.
If it has no language in it about rendering accountings, then interestingly, many times we advise clients that they do not have a duty to report,
really?
To do an accounting or to give record keeping to a particular beneficiary under the will. Under the trust, excuse
me. Right.
Let me correct that quickly, under the trust. It's a sticky wicket there about the duty to disclose and give accountings under a trust. But generally speaking, we will look to the document. If the document does not require it, we will advise our client that they are not required to give an accounting. If they elect to give an accounting, if that's something that they as a trustee desire to do, then we certainly will support them in that. But one of the purposes many times of a trust is just that, to keep the information private.
Gotcha.
And therefore, the trustee is not required to give disclosure, because the grantor of the trust specifically created it so that it would remain private. You're not going to get a copy of some of the many trusts that we hear about that are created for certain foundations, very important families who have set up trusts for different purposes. Those trusts are private, and what's within those trusts is private.
That's interesting. I can see this being a topic next week, because I'm intrigued with that whole issue of the creating of trusts, remainder trusts, and things of that nature. All right, let's talk legal. The right advice at the right time with Cecil Harvell and Harvell and Collins. You're listening to Coastal Daybreak.